The Dr. Taz Show.
The podcast.
Dr. Taz. Your good health journey starts now. Here's Dr. Taz.
Welcome back, everyone. We are going to start talking all things fertility. That's right. Today, joining me, I have Dr. Jamie Knottman. She is a leading fertility specialist based in New York City who's appeared on NBC Nightly News and many other media outlets discussing the latest breakthroughs in women's health and fertility. Her experience as one of the top experts in her field inspired her to create Truly MD, a site dedicated to providing women with advice and information on their reproductive health, from fertility and all the way to pregnancy. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Knottman, and welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we are excited to get started here and talk all things fertility with you. I know that I meet so many patients in my practice who are struggling with this particular issue, and it's an issue that crosses all ages. It's not just something that women in their 30s deal with. We see women even as young as 20s having issues with fertility. I'm curious, from your perspective, what do you think is happening? Why are so many women today having trouble getting pregnant? Not just the ones that are trying to get pregnant older, but even younger women.
I think a lot of it does have to do with female age. I think, you know, our concept of young has changed so much in the past, you know, 20 to 30 years, such that when our mothers were trying to get pregnant, they were in their 20s. And now we say, oh, I'm 30, I'm 32, I'm so young. But that has really changed. Our definition of young has changed. So I think a lot of it is actually female age related. I also think the sperm, we have seen a decrease in sperm quality and quantity over the past 20 or so years. There's a lot more male factor infertility than there ever was before. So that definitely plays a role. So I would say those are probably the two biggest things.
Why do you think, how would you explain, so the age I think we all get, and that's so true, like even a generation prior, like my mom had me very young. She had me at 18 or 19, and I know for many women they were having children much younger, but we think of 30 as young. I had my first child at 34, I had my second one as 36. I thankfully, you know, didn't have a lot of issues, but I can tell you I pretty much thought of myself as very young back then, as I do now.
Yeah, no.
So I understand the age piece, I get that, but what's happening with sperm quality? What do you think the change is there? Is there something there that's environmentally induced or genetically induced?
Environmental. I mean, we don't really know, right? For a long time people said, oh, maybe it's cell phones, maybe it's computers, maybe it's, you know, maybe it's boxers versus briefs. I don't think anyone really knows what it is. It's probably a combination of environmental and genetic, and maybe also lifestyle, you know, which is, I guess, is also environmental. But it does, and men are older when they're having children as well. I mean,
true.
Probably, you know, several, you know, 20 years ago, as women were younger, so were men. So I think all of this sort of combines together. And I also think that even though fertility is, or infertility rather, is something that people tend to not, they're not so vocal about, people are more vocal about it today than we were 30 years ago. So you just hear about it a lot more.
Interesting. And then, you know, for many women, they want to know, are they fertile or are they not fertile? What do you tell your patients? Like, how can you gauge your fertility? I know that there are, you know, the classic signs of having a regular period and all that, you know, other stuff that we know to look for, but sometimes that's not enough. How do you gauge fertility or teach women to maybe track their status with fertility?
So, am I fertile is one of the most commonly questions that we are asked. And it's oftentimes, you know, patients come to our office not even thinking of being ready to have kids and saying, hey, I just want to make sure I am fertile. And what I always say is that the only true test of one's fertility is their ability to conceive, right? So you can go and get a whole slew of fertility tests and your GYN or your primary care doctor can say, oh my goodness, like your ovaries look, they're almost menopausal, or your sperm is such poor quality. But those are parameters or tests that we use to assess infertile patients. So while those tests may come back abnormal and may make us concerned that you may experience infertility, unless you're actually out there trying to get pregnant month after month, you're technically not infertile.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I'm just jumping on it because So many people come in and they want the classic. They want, I want day three labs, you know, day three being day three of their cycle. You know, I want to know what my AMH level is. I want to know what my FSH level is. And they want this data to make this determination of whether they're fertile or not. How helpful is that data? How helpful are those numbers or the quote unquote day three labs? What's your thought of all of that?
They're definitely helpful, right? They help us gauge where somebody is sort of on their fertility journey, and more specifically how they're going to respond to fertility medications. So AMHs are super helpful for our patients who are going through fertility treatment, anti-Müllerian hormone levels, because they tell us what's the dose of medication should I give this patient and how many eggs should this patient expect. That way you sort of set you set some expectations early on. If I see a couple who's coming in having been trying for, you know, 6 months or a year and the FSH is high and the AMH is low, then I say to myself, all right, this is probably an egg quality issue and the likelihood of me getting a lot of eggs or a lot of good quality eggs is fairly low. But when I see a woman who's going to come in for egg freezing and her AMH is low and her FSH is borderline, I don't say to her, hey, I think that you're infertile and this is not going to work for you. I say, I think today the quantity of eggs that you have in your ovaries is lower than we would expect, but it's hard to know exactly what that means for you.
So I think that is such important information to get out to our listeners, because I know that there's a lot of angst and anxiety over what my AMH level is and what my FSH level is, and sort of the assumption that somebody is infertile before, like you're saying, they've even attempted to try. And so for my listeners, I would just, you know, urge them to realize that, you know, the first job is to really try to get pregnant. Is that what I'm hearing? You know, I'm trying to make sure I'm hearing that correctly, but the first job is to try. It's only until you try that we really have a sense of how successful the whole process will go. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, this is how I frame it. If you, I see a couple, I just actually hung up with a patient who's this exact couple. They're 36 and they're going to get married in September and they want to have three kids. And her AMH is one, which is low. And they come to see me. I'm going to say to them, hey, you probably should make embryos and sort of prepare yourself for what is likely going to happen as the years, you know, pass by and you're 42 or 43 trying for your third child. Because your AMH suggests to me that the quantity of eggs that you have in your ovaries is lower than it should be today. And by the time you're 42, it will definitely be lower. I would say the same thing to an egg freezing patient who comes in at 36, 37 and says to me, I haven't met somebody. I definitely want kids, but I don't know what the future holds. I say, okay, well, if you freeze your eggs now, then we have a better chance of if we're waiting. If I see a couple and, you know, the female partner's 40 and the AMH is not great and the FSH is borderline, but they've never tried, I may say to them, try for 3 months. See if you get pregnant in those first 3 months, because if you do, then great. If you don't, then at least you've tried. And so now we know where we're going.
Interesting. And one thing, too, I'm curious, just again, this is more a practice question, but I think it's important for the listeners as well. You know, can those AMH levels change? Can they change over the course of time? Do you see them fluctuate in practice? We've seen a little bit of that within our practice. I'm just curious if that's something you're experiencing, too, as you see so many different women in their journey to fertility.
So AMH technically it only goes down and it doesn't fluctuate based on where you are in your menstrual cycle. Like FSH, we know we have to check on day two or day three of the period because day two or day three of the period is when those results are accurate. AMH can be sent on any day of the menstrual cycle. However, AMH was always like billed or touted to be not to be impacted by if you're on the pill or if you're pregnant or whatever it may be. But we do see a slight suppressive effect for women who are on the birth control pill. Additionally, AMH, there's different companies that run the AMH test, so you have to be careful of where you're sending it and that you're looking at it in the same companies, you know, time after time.
And we've definitely experienced that in practice. And then again, what happens is if you have an incorrect result or a result that's changing dramatically and may not be completely accurate, it's again the anxiety for so many different women. Now, women today, Dr. Notman, I'm sure, you know, they're go-getters, they're accomplishing all kinds of amazing things, and having children in our early 20s, you know, is not really an option for the majority of women today who really want to take the time to pursue a career or want to, you know, do other things. Because let's be honest, fertility does change us. It changes all of us. Mm-hmm. So for those women who are charging through the world and trying to freeze their eggs, you know, what's your advice to them? Is this something they should have, you know, they should be thinking about in their 20s or in their 30s? Or, you know, is there a right time for that particular procedure? And even what's involved in that procedure? That's not something I, you know, personally went through. But again, I have to talk to so many women who are debating that option and just want some advice and guidance.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's one of the most popular questions, again, that I'm asked, not only in my practice, but like in the Soul Fossil Cycle locker room or at a dinner party. Mm-hmm. When should mm-hmm. I freeze my eggs? How early? You know, what is the best time? And the thing is that probably in a perfect world, we'd all freeze our eggs at age, you know, 21, because we're most fertile in our 20s. We're going to get the most eggs. We're going to do the best from them. But the reality is most of us won't need those eggs that we freeze when we're 21. So most of us are going to undergo a procedure that we don't really need. So I generally, I sort of steer women away from doing it in their early 20s, unless they have a family history that sort of makes me concerned, such as, you know, my mom had menopause at 34, or, you know, I've had multiple surgeries on my ovaries, or something that puts them at higher risk for infertility or for diminished ovarian reserve down the road. But I think I always say the sweet spot for somebody to freeze their eggs is probably between the ages of 32 or 31 and 34, 35, because at that point, if you're, let's say you're single and you want to have a child, but you haven't done it yet, it's not too young, and it'll probably give you what you want down the road in the future.
So ages 32 to about 34, 35, ideal times to freeze your eggs. How does that process even work? Can you walk us through the steps of just sort of what someone, you know, what do they have to go through to freeze their eggs?
Yeah, so I think one of the biggest myths out there is that egg freezing is this sort of long, drawn out, horrible process, when in fact it actually takes about 12 days to freeze your eggs. The time frame is much shorter than people have thought it to be. Usually what happens is women come in for a consult, we do a bunch of blood tests, and then if a patient decides that they want to go through it, they're pretty much ready to go in the next one or two menstrual cycles. The egg freezing process or the egg freezing treatment, it lines up to mimic sort of, it starts when you start your menstrual cycle. So once a patient starts their period, they start to take injectable medications. Injectable medications are fertility hormones, and we give you these medications usually for about 10 to 12 days. After this time period, once the follicles, which are the shells that hold the egg, reach a certain size, and the estrogen level reaches a certain peak, that's when we say that you're ready for the final shot, which we call the trigger shot. And the eggs are extracted 35 hours later in the operating room.
Gotcha. Okay. And then those can stay. How long can you freeze your eggs for? You just stick them in the freezer like you do anything else? Or how long are they good?
This is one thing where there's no expiration date, actually, in reality. Because, I mean, yes, there is an expiration date in terms of do we think patients should get pregnant above the age of 55? No, we don't. The eggs will last as long as you want them to last. Once they're frozen, they can remain in that condition. I generally say to my patients, pick a cutoff point for yourself. Meaning, if you say it's 45, and at 45, if I'm single, I am going to go back and use my eggs, then that's your cutoff point. Because what I think what happens is, I always liken going to see us is like going to the dentist. You sort of keep putting it off because you're just like, oh, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. I want to do it. When in reality, if you had a date and the time that you're going to do it, no matter what happens, then it would make sure that you don't just sit there in limbo.
Fantastic. Well, this is all great advice, and everything from AMH to understanding freezing your eggs and understanding that before you can decide you're infertile, you really have to try first. Dr. Notman, what is the one sort of parting piece of advice you would give to women on their fertility journey? You know, what is the one thing you wish they would understand and maybe even, you know, take sort of accountability for as they're embarking on starting a family?
The reason why Dr. Salabian and I started TrulyMD was all centered around education. Because, and what I would tell women is just educate yourself on your body, on your fertility, on sort of what's the reality of what it is, you know, to be a woman in many ways. Because if you are truly educated, then you can make decisions, good decisions for yourself and for your future. I mean, not, you know, parenthood is different for all of us. What is right for me may not be right for you, may not be right for your best friend. But if you go into the process with education and you make the decisions knowing sort of everything that's out there, then I think you'll forgive yourself more later and you'll feel like, you know what, I had all the options and this is what I chose.
I think that is amazing advice. I think we're embarking on an era, while we've had women's rights and everything else for a while, but we're truly embarking on an era that every woman can decide her path for herself. Mm-hmm. And there doesn't need to be regret and longing because you need to know everything that's on the table. So if you're a career gal, but you know you want a family, maybe this is something you should be thinking about. If you know you want a family right away, well then, you know, pursue that option as well. But I do think that's important for all of us to remember that there's no reason why we can't embark on the path that we choose and not fulfill our dreams for a family. But again, if we don't know, or if we're disconnected from our bodies, or we lack the education about how all these different things work, then we often don't make the choices that are best for us. Dr. Notman, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. How can my listeners find you and learn more about you?
Our website is called trulymd.com. So it's truly-md.com. And they can find myself and Dr. Salabian, who's my co-founder of TrulyMD there. Currently, I work at CCRM NY, if they want to find us that way.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for taking some time this afternoon to talk to me about fertility and egg freezing. I really appreciate it. And to my listeners, charge ahead, make good choices, and as Dr. Notman told us, let's get as educated as we can to all the options that are out there. Thank you guys for listening.